Well, here we are in spring break. I hope you had a marvelous spring break and had a good time. I know we did. There were 26 of us that spent spring break in Nicaragua, and I happen to be wearing a Nicaragua shirt. I have a couple friends on the front row that are wearing the Nicaragua shirts, and maybe a few others that will be scattered out throughout this weekend. And this is something customary that they would wear in Central America for a dress-up kind of occasion, and I just thought that'd be wonderful to purchase them, and several other people thought so as well. So if you see a few people in something similar, you'll know that they were probably one of the 26 that went on the trip. Now, in a couple of weeks, we'll have a full presentation from several of the team members telling you a little bit about it, but I would just like to highlight a couple things, and I'd first like to express appreciation to, number one, to those who gave during the Christmas Eve offering. We took all of the money that came in, and we put it towards this trip to buy supplies, to help for a variety of things, and it was such a generous and amazing offering, and for those of you that were able to give, thank you so much. It put us in a position to just succeed in a lot of ways, and we had an abundance of money that we were able to leave a big offering with the missionaries to further the ministry after we left. So give yourselves a round of applause for being so generous. That's marvelous. Number two, I want to thank each and every one of you who prayed for us while we were gone, whether it was one prayer every day, whether it was short or long. I'll give you one example of the ways in which your prayers prevailed. On the last day that we were there, we did a little bit of sightseeing after a long week of work, and we went to an active volcano, which we went up the mountainside on a bus with all the luggage, and you know, not a cool bus, definitely a school bus, if you can imagine that. And we started hearing this thumping coming down the side of the volcano. Eventually, that tire it popped, it just blew up. It was crazy. But we were also running low on gas, and it was so amazing that God got us down the hill on a street where there was a gas station. Literally, we ran out of gas on fumes, coasted into the pumps, and the tire exploded. And like, how does that happen? Yeah, just the prayers of God's people and Him watching out. And here's the kicker of all of it. Like, God is just so good. I think sometimes He just wants us to see how good He is. So we were safe. We made it to the gas station when the tire exploded. We ran out of gas in the parking lot of the gas station. It was the nicest gas station the entire 8 days that we were there. Literally, a clean bathroom. You never get that in Central America. They had an espresso machine, so yours truly was happy, 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 happy. They had good snacks. They had ice cream and all kinds of amazing people watching. So, like, it took like an hour and a half to change the tire and all this stuff, but just your prayers were absolutely amazing. Number three, gratitude towards those who drove us to and from DIA. All of the flights that we took going there and coming back were like at the worst times. People came and picked us up in the middle of the night, dropped us off early in the morning, and just amazing. It took two different vans and a truck to carry all the luggage, so appreciate the team who did that. And then I want to express appreciation to Pastor Chris, who covered the weekend services while I was gone. Just so marvelous to see so many people contributing in so many different ways. Get this, the team of 26 ranged from the youngest being age 10 to the oldest being age 72. Isn't that amazing? And God used every single person, every age, to do just marvelous, marvelous things. It was remarkable. And let me give you a for example. A lot of the ministry that we did was evangelism and outreach, and it requires open-air testimony. So you go into poor villages, people come out, and we start with these open-air testimonies. And it was remarkable how different people would step up and give their testimony, and it would be exactly what that body of people needed to hear. And everyone was used. So like the little kids heard testimonies from 10 and 11-year-old boys sharing that, or a 13-year-old girl, or whatever. It was just remarkable the way at which it happened. And what was so cool about that too is many of us had gone through the Rooted series, and if you haven't done that, you'll want to sign up for the next one. It's marvelous. But part of Rooted is helping you give your testimony. So many people were prepared to give short testimonies while we were on the missions trip, and God was like preparing so many people even before we got to the mission field. So that was absolutely remarkable. Get this, 80% of Nicaraguans live in poverty. So it's a socialist country, and you want to see like why socialism is such a horrible thing, just go to Central America, to a place like Nicaragua. You have like 10 to 15% of the people that are uber wealthy and 80 to 85% complete poverty, abject poverty, like live in tin shacks, no running water. Like, I mean, blow your mind kind of poverty. But it's the second poorest country in the Western hemisphere. Haiti is the first. And the missionaries that we serve, remarkable. They've been there for 15 years. They have labored hard through the pandemic, through all of it. They stood with it. They have over 900 feeding centers throughout the country. Over 100,000 people a month get fed through the ministry. And we got to be on all aspects of the ministry, loading boxes, delivering boxes, giving boxes, feeding people. It was just remarkable to be able to see that. We spent time sharing Jesus in the city dump, in poor villages without running water. We bussed in 175 kids for amazing day camps. We doted over them. We loved on them. We spent an entire day just giving these kids one of the happiest days of their life. We led people to Christ. We prayed for people in need. We gave away food, 93 degrees and 85% humidity. I mean, you would just go to bed absolutely spent, but heart just absolutely overflowing, like, when can I do it again? So although many of us are here today, part of our hearts remain with the people of that country, and we're just so grateful for this experience and so grateful to Brock and Amy Grill, who put in a tremendous amount of time to set our team up for success. So really good to be back. We certainly missed you, but thank you again for your generosity, for your prayers, and for your support. Well, we are going to end in about 45 minutes from now around the Lord's table in communion, and we're going to spend some time during the communion time reflecting on Palm Sunday and reading the scriptures of when Jesus came riding on that donkey and tie that into our communion time together. So I want to encourage you to sit back and relax and open up your heart as you prepare your heart for that communion time. So we are studying the book of Joseph, and we're dialing into this theme of hope and resilience. I don't know of a person, maybe other than Ruth, who was as flattened by life circumstances as Joseph. And the normal person probably would have lived a life of just complete insanity, brokenness, dysfunction. But God blessed this guy in such a way that no matter what life threw at him, he bounced back like he found hope. And when he was subject to pain and suffering, keep in mind, he was incarcerated from the age of 17 to 30, either incarcerated or enslaved. He was sold into slavery by his brothers. His mom died at birth, birthing his little baby. Like everything that a person could go through that was difficult, he went through. But there was hope, there was resilience, even in the midst of all of that. So today we find Joseph, part number 7 of this series, as a blessed and highly favored man. He's serving as the prime minister of Egypt, and he's masterfully managing a severe famine that is taking place throughout the entire Middle East. And without grain, masses of people from the Middle East are forced to come to Egypt, where he was given insight from God, a dream to store up for 7 years provisions to help the world through this incredible time of famine. So Joseph is highly blessed. He's highly favored of God. He's being used of God. Now this famine causes his family, who lives in Canaan, 250 miles away, forces them to come to Egypt to buy grain. And God uses these remarkable circumstances to put his brothers, who sold him into slavery some 22 years ago, somewhere between 20 and 22 years ago, they sold him into slavery, and God puts these groups of people, Joseph and his brothers, face to face for the first time in 22 years after horrible dysfunction in their family. So God divinely uses the situation to create some reconciliation. And this is where the pickle begins. And I want to use the term, the metaphor, the idea of a pickle to illustrate a little bit what I'm talking about. This next picture here will show you the picture of what a pickle is. For those of you that are baseball players, this is what a pickle looks like. When a runner is caught between two bases, when a runner is caught between two people are trying to throw him out, this is an uncomfortable situation. You don't know if you go forward, you don't know if you go back, you're caught in the middle of it. Well, this passage of scripture, this part of the series, really highlights what to do in a pickle and when we experience those pickles in life. How many know sooner or later you'll be in a pickle? Hard situation, a challenging, caught between two things. Well, this is dedicated to anyone in the room who might be dealing with a pickle right now. We pick up our story in Genesis chapter 43, verse 1. It says, now the famine was still severe in the land. So when they hid all the grain they bought from Egypt, their father said to them, go back and buy us a little more food. But Judah said to him, Judah was one of the brothers, the man, meaning Joseph, warned us solemnly, you shall not see my face again unless your brother is with you, referring to the little brother Benjamin, who didn't go with them on their first purchase into Egypt. Now, if you will send our brother along with us, we will go and buy food for you. But if you will not send him, we will not go down, because the man said to us, you will not see my face again unless your brother is with you. So Judah, the brother, is trying to explain to the father, Jacob, that we're in a pickle. You want us to go buy food, but we can't go unless we take Benjamin, because this validates our story that we had a younger brother and what's going on in our past and all of this stuff. So what do you want us to do, Dad? And the family is caught in this pickle. So jump to verse number 8. Then Judah said to Israel, his father, and Israel was the other name for Jacob. You may recall in the story, the name Jacob means deceiver. When God got a hold of Jacob, he changed his name from deceiver to Israel, one who struggles with God. So when you read the Bible, Israel, Jacob, they're one and the same. God, meaning Benjamin, along with me, and we will go at once, so that we and you and our children may live and not die. I myself will guarantee it. You can hold me responsible for him. If I do not bring him back to you and set him here before you, I will bear the blame before you all of my life. So let's talk a little bit about a pickle in the life of the family and a pickle in your situation, perhaps my situation in the future to come. Four ideas that I'd like to communicate. So the first is this: if you're in a pickle, number one, it may be God's way of bringing a permanent solution into your life. The famine in the Middle East was so powerful that it forced people out of their comfort zones. They had to leave wherever they were in the Middle East to go to Egypt to buy grain. They had to travel to survive. It was the only Costco, if you will, that was open in all of that area, in all of that region of the world. And what seems so bad, having to travel 250 miles to survive, what seems so dry and so barren, was actually a blessing in disguise. How many know when God's in your life that even the worst things can become something good? That he has the ability to invert bad things for good. That he has the ability to take very twisted situations and make them straight. That's the type of God that we serve. So they're being pushed out of Canaan into Egypt, and it causes the dysfunctional brothers to have a conversation that needed to be had many years ago. All of this lie was still covered over, this lie that they had sold their brother into slavery. They never fessed up to their father that they sold him. They led their father to believe that he had been murdered by a ravenous beast, right? So all of this dysfunction is sort of lingering, and God says, I'm going to use a famine to heal a very dysfunctional family. Sometimes God uses extreme circumstances to bring blessings into our life. God had these high hopes for this family. God wanted them to be the foundation for the 12 tribes of Israel. Think about this for just a second. And if you want to read up on this, it's found in Revelation chapter 21, approximately verse number 10. When the new heavens and new earth are created, when we go into eternity, okay, think future, God is going to bring a new Jerusalem that he's created down, and a new Jerusalem will be introduced to. There'll be 12 gates in this new city of Jerusalem that will always be open, never closed. Those 12 gates will be named after the 12 tribes of Israel. Do you know who the 12 tribes of Israel? They're headed by Joseph's 12 brothers, who were so dysfunctional and so messed up. God wanted to heal this family. He had high hopes. He had high promises to bless these people, to do amazing things. God's got this vision to name gates after these 12 brothers, after these 12 heads. Isn't that amazing that we can come from such dysfunctional situations, circumstances? We can make so many mistakes, and God says, watch this. I'm going to bless it. I'm going to reverse it. I'm going to help it. I'm going to speak purpose in life. You have no idea the types of things that God may want to do through you you and your dysfunctional situation you're in. That would be an appropriate time for an amen. And that's what's going on here. God is going to heal this family. God is going to deal with this family. They needed to be fixed, not with a Band-Aid, but a real fix, a real healing. And if you're in a pickle and you're experiencing an uncomfortable situation, perhaps God wants to bring a big fix to your life. And the only way to do that is to put you in an uncomfortable position where you don't know. You're caught between two bases. You're uncomfortable. And it's in that uncomfortableness that God says, watch me do something great. The best thing that you can do is accept the fact that God has you in the right place at the right time, and he's going to do the right thing for you and your situation. And instead of fighting against that pickle, we begin to flow in it, knowing that God is with us and for us and beside us and within us, and he's already way ahead of us in the future, laying out our steps, ordering our steps, providing a way forward in our lives. And it's in these moments that we learn to depend upon him. Think about one of the most quoted passages of Scripture. Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. Trust in the Lord with all of your heart. Lean not on your own understanding, but acknowledge him in all of your ways, and he will make your paths straight. We have nothing to fear when we face a pickle. Number two, in a pickle, money is a false fix often used to get our way out of the pickle. When we get uncomfortable, one of the temptations is to throw money at the problem. Notice verse 15. So the men took gifts and the double the amount of silver and Benjamin also. The first thing that they wanted to do was to armor up, to stock up on a bunch of money, right? How do you deal with the dysfunction? How do you deal with the uncomfortable? You try to give it all to Joseph and pay him off, right? Goes on to say in verse 22 that we've also brought additional silver with us to buy food. Then jumping down to Genesis chapter 43, verse 25, it says they prepared their gifts for Joseph's arrival at noon because they had heard that they were there. So when Joseph came home, notices this, it says they presented to him the gifts they had brought into the house and they bowed down to the ground before him. And again, this idea that they're going to deal with the uncomfortableness in life by throwing money at it. They packed silver, lots of it, precious metals and things to give to them, to give to Joseph. And isn't that oftentimes the way that we deal with problems in our life? When the marriage gets a little bit sour, the knee-jerk reaction is to throw a few dollars at it, right? To go buy a new car and thinking that that's going to fix the marriage. And the marriage is right back in shambles as soon as the new car smell wears off, right? And yes, it's an immediate fix. Everyone gets happy and euphoric, maybe over the new car, or our kids start acting like little monsters. Let's go buy them the latest phone, right? Oh man, let's reward them with a little bit more, thinking that that's going to fix the issues. And what happens when we throw more money at just the next time around when they behave worse, when the marriage gets more difficult? Then you just have to throw bigger amounts of dollars at the problem. And there's this craziness in our mind that we can buy our way out of the pickle. And that's not the case. The vicious cycle repeats itself. The core issues are not confronted. And I would ask you the question, what do you do to fix the busted stuff in your life? When you think about money, think about what God is trying to say to us through money. Think about that dollar bill in your pocket, that $10 bill in your pocket, that $100 bill in your pocket. All of the bills minted in this country have this little phrase, "In God we trust." When it comes to the broken stuff in your life, are you trusting the money or are you trusting the statement? Who's your trust in? And a lot of the real complex problems in life, Elon Musk and all of his money can't buy his way out of the real problems in life. And that's why God has come to really fix broken things, to really overhaul things. That's the solution. Think about it. Does Joseph care about their money? And all the things they're bringing, He's prime minister of Egypt, the superpower of the day. He answers to Pharaoh and Pharaoh only. He is filthy rich at this stage in his life. Money does not matter. He does not want money. He doesn't want to be bought out. He doesn't want to be bought off. He doesn't want people throwing money at the pickle. He wants a permanent fix. He wants his little brother. He wants his father. He wants his brothers to recognize that they've injured him, that if he wants family reconciliation, not money. Cash will never be able to do for you what only the cross can. What you're really looking for is not cash to bail your way out. What you're looking for is the power of the cross and the blood that was shed on the cross to atone for a whole bunch of sin and shortcomings and failures and hiccups. That's the real solution to the problem when God comes and really begins to deal with the core issues of our lives and of our families. So stop throwing money at the problems. Invite God into the situation. Find yourself on your knees crying out, inviting him in, and you will find your way out of the pickle comes through his invisible hands creating a way forward for you and not what you have in your pocket or your bank account. That would be another appropriate place for him. You're doing good this evening. Man, you want to know what's the worst thing of coming from a humid culture to no humidity here? Is being dry. Man, skin is already itching and peeling and all that good stuff that happens in Colorado. All right, in the pickle number three, what starts with fear can end with a feast. The brothers arrive in Egypt with the youngest of the family, Benjamin. This is Joseph's full-blooded little brother, whom he hasn't seen since this kid was just a boy. 22 years have passed since he's seen his little brother. Think about how much he loves his little brother when their mother died in birth, bringing him into the world. They have no biological mother. They haven't seen each other for 22 years. This is a big, big moment. A lot is wrapped up. And it says in Genesis 43, verse 29, that as he looked about and saw his brother Benjamin, his own mother's son, he asked, "Is this your younger brother, the one you told me about?" Again, he's seen him for the first time. Think about how much his little brother's changed in 22 years. And he said, "God be gracious to you, my son." These are the first words that he uttered to his little brother. "May God be gracious to you." And then it says in verse 30, and it's so telling, deeply moved at the sight of his brother, Joseph hurried out and he looked for a place to weep. The only thing that he can do is find a private place to cry it out, to snot it out, to deal with a lifetime of emotions that have built up within him. Who knows if he thought that he'd ever see his little brother ever again, and he's weeping in a private room. Verse 31, and after he had washed his face, he came out, controlling himself. He said, "Serve the food." Upon arrival, Joseph does not speak to the brothers, but he has them escorted to his mansion where he will have this special meal that will be served at noon. And Joseph is thinking, "Bring in the fattened calf. My brothers have arrived, all of them. Let us eat." But the response of the brothers is one of fear. And think about the polar opposites in which the family is dealing with this situation. One says, "Fattened calf, let's celebrate." The others are thinking fear and terror. When God is trying to fix things in your life, it's easy to become fearful, to get anxious, to get nervous. When he really begins to intervene and move pieces around and bring things together, it's easy to become fearful. The brothers are on edge. They're defensive. They're trying to protect their fragile lives. They attempt to explain themselves to Joseph's servants why they're doing what they're doing and tell Joseph this and do that. They are full of fear. And Joseph's servant says, "It's all right. Do not be afraid." Where have you heard those words before? Who was a master at telling his disciples, "Do not be afraid"? What's the number one commandment in the New Testament? Do not be afraid. It's repeated throughout. This is God's language. This is the way that the great shepherd deals with his sheep. When we become anxious, when we become fearful, what is God's command? Do not be afraid. And you see God coming into the situation, ministering to people's anxious hearts. And that's what the Lord did back then, and that's what the Lord is doing today. He wants to minister to you in your situation. When you're feeling all of that stuff, those unrestrained emotions, when that anxiety, when that fear of the unknown is there. And while they are fighting fear, everything is being cared for. Simeon, who has been held in jail this whole time till the family came back with the little brother, is released. The brothers are all together again. Joseph's servants are washing their feet. They're fearful and they're getting cleaned up after this long journey. Every aspect, a meal is being prepared. Everything is being laid out for them. The pickle they are in is an opportunity to indulge not their fear, but to indulge the feast. Let me call your attention to a subtle but amazing detail found in one of the most known psalms, Psalm 23. Psalm is a metaphor about a shepherd and his sheep, highlighting the shepherd's infinite ability to care for his own. And watch the fear in this passage and the feast in this passage. Psalm 23, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not be in want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He restores my soul. He guides me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Watch verse 4. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. Why? Because you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. And notice, the human tendency is to want to become fearful. And when we're experiencing all of this fear, what is God doing? He's preparing a feast. Verse 5, but you prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. Isn't that amazing? That while we're being fearful, God is creating the feast. While the brothers are anxious, Joseph is preparing a feast. What starts out so uncomfortable, so overwhelmed by emotions is being converted into this time of abundance and goodness and grace and reconciliation, friend. And in God's hand, your uncomfortable pickle situation is completely cared for. Every detail of your life is being managed and looked over. God is getting ready to bring a huge feast into a fearful moment of people who are willing to put their hope and their trust in Him. That's our God. That's what He does. That's how He acts. That's how kind and merciful He is. The fear you are facing may be an opportunity for God to bring an amazing feast into your situation. In a pickle, point number 4, that private and public tears are the appropriate responses to your situation. Twice in the story, Joseph has to weep. Here is this powerful ruler, the greatest man on earth, second to the Pharaoh only, is reduced to a puddle of tears and snot. The first snotty moment was when he saw Benjamin after 22 years. The second is getting ready to come, Genesis 45, verse 1. Then Joseph could no longer control himself before his attendants. Keep in mind, he's cried in private already. Now he's in public. He could not control himself before all of his attendants, and he cried out, "Have everyone leave my presence." So there was no one with Joseph when he made himself known to his brothers. And he wept so loudly that the Egyptians heard him, and Pharaoh's household heard about it. Joseph said to his brothers, "I am Joseph. Is my father still living?" But his brothers were not able to answer him because they were terrified at his presence. And then Joseph said to his brothers, "Come close to me." And when they had done so, he said, "I am your brother Joseph, the one you sold into Egypt. And now, do not be distressed and do not be angry with yourselves for selling me here, because it was to save the lives that God has sent me ahead of you. For 2 years now, there has been famine in the land, and for the next 5 years, there will not be plowing and reaping. But God sent me ahead of you to preserve for you a remnant on earth, and to save your lives by great deliverance." The emotions have been building in his life, and now they are released. Years of being strong, years of being stable, to manage a country and a world in famine, all of that suppressed hurt, all of that sorrow that is being masked by leadership and by strength breaks, and he is reduced to tears and snot. The only way for him to survive this moment is to cry it out. Friends, can I tell you that tears will make your pickle bearable? It will make your pickle bearable. God can do in one tear session what a million and one psychiatrists cannot do for you. Sometimes the greatest thing, the greatest healing agent and survival method is to cry it out. I've spent 6 years in higher learning to be a pastor over my life. 6 years of learning never prepared me for some of the situations I've walked into 25 plus years of ministry. When called to the second floor of Penrose Main Hospital to be introduced to a widow, to sit down with her kids and tell her dad's not coming home. To show up at someone's home after someone's committed suicide. There are never the words. But in all of those situations, there is a way out. And you want to know what it looks like? Sometimes sitting in the middle of a floor in people's house or in a hospital and crying it out with people. When the pickle is so difficult, just crying it out. Letting salty tears say it all. Letting slimy snot speak everything that is within you. And when you get in those hard situations, it's not about words, it's about tears. And if you're in a tough one today, it may be private, it may be public. His situation was so intense, his pickle was so difficult that it required private and public tears. And it was through those tears that God's greatest work would be done. And it may be through your tears that God's greatest work is done in your life. If you don't believe me, listen to this. Weeping opened the door to the truth. As he wept, he said, I'm your brother. Only through those tears could he come out and say, I'm your brother. Weeping opened the door of forgiveness. Come close to me. Not so that I can punch you in the head, that I can hug you, that I can smell you, that I can embrace you, that we can be together. Weeping opened the door to reconciliation. The pride was gone. The humility invaded the room. God's greatest work happens in our tears. You can cry your way out of a difficult situation. Whether it's crying because of the sin that you entered into, whether it's the pain of the financial situation you're in, the strained relationships that are all around you, the loss of a loved one, the loneliness of a divorce or a broken relationship, I can assure you that tears are the way out. Psalm 126, verse 5 says this, that those who sow in tears will reap the songs of joy. Let me say that again. Those who sow in tears will reap with songs of joy. And the tears that you pour out are the very tears that God is going to catch and begin to restore your life going forward. A pickle is not the end of your life. A pickle is just an opportunity for God to be God. And sometimes these awful, difficult circumstances that we're in may be the very prescription that God wants to use to heal some of your dysfunctional past, to overcome some of those painful moments of yesterday, to not only heal you, but to work miracles in your heart, in your life, in your finances, in your marriage, in your relationship with your kids, in all phases of life. And friends, when you go through these things, God's word is this, do not be afraid. And I am boldly telling you today that if you're going through a hard time, you wake up tomorrow and do not be fearful. Because it's in that difficulty that God is creating a feast, a blessing, something good to pour out in your life. And when there are not words, God will take those tears and do something good in and through your life.